good it could be.
Welcome. We'll call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect it's approximately 3:35 p.m. on this Wednesday, February 9, 2011. We do have a quorum present with us today. Beginning on my left are Senator Stevens, Senator Stedman. On my right, Senator French, Senator Willikowski, and co-chair Senator Wagner, and myself, Senator Pascan. We welcome everyone here today. I do want to also reflect in the audience, we have Senator Giesel joining us today. Please, everyone, turn off your cell phones. The vibrate does interfere with all of the transmission and the recordings that are going on today. The purpose of today's meeting is to take up Senate Bill 42, and that relates to power projects and the Alaska Energy Authority. And today we do welcome Sarah Fisher Goad. She is the director of the Alaska Energy Authority, and she will be presenting to us today and also on Friday the merits of this bill, as well as a brief history on AEA and the reasons why the AEA's powers and duties that we're going to be talking about should be restored. Other representatives from the AEA are here. I met Amy earlier today, and there are members of the Department of Law will be available to answer your questions if you have any, if they arise. This is certainly a significant bill and an important bill, and but with that, we welcome you, Sarah. So if you would please give your name for the record and state your affiliation, and then begin with the merits.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher Goad. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. I want to thank you and Senator Wagner for scheduling Senate Bill 42 today. Senate Bill 42 authorizes the Alaska Energy Authority to construct and own new energy projects, hire staff, and adopt its own procurement code.
Mr. Wagner, if you could please
Promote it. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Bill number 42.
Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 42, I believe it's backslash A version, is before us. Thank you. You may continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The cornerstone of Senate Bill 42 is for AEA to construct and own new energy projects. Alaska's energy policy target is to reach 50% of electricity generation through renewable energy resources by 2025. And to achieve this goal, we must pursue and invest now to develop capacity for a major hydroelectric project. In November of 2010, AEA issued a preliminary decision document identifying a hydroelectric project on the Susitna River as a recommended project to pursue. AEA presented its findings and provided an overview to this committee in January. And I do want to recognize one of the persons on the teleconference is Brian Carey, who did that presentation. He is AEA's hydroelectric project manager, and he will be available to answer questions if there's anything specific that may arise with respect to that project and this process. Senate Bill 42 provides AEA the authority to construct and own new projects. Upon passage of this bill, AEA will move forward with the Susitna project by filing a preliminary permit with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Without the authority to own new projects, AEA would not be able to pursue this project. And Mr. Chairman, most of my testimony is going to be with respect to kind of outlining a bit of the history of the Alaska Energy Authority and a few of the other components of the legislation. AEA was created by the state legislature in 1976. AEA is a public corporation and a component unit of the state of Alaska. And the mission of the Alaska Energy Authority is to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska. The board of directors of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority is also the board of directors of AEA. There are 7 members, 5 public members, and the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Through the 80s, AEA worked to develop the state's energy resources as a key element in diversifying Alaska's economy. A number of large-scale projects were constructed. The Fort Am Pool project was constructed in the 80s and was sold in 2002. Also, there is a Larson Bay project, which was transferred to the city of Larson Bay in the fall of 2010. The Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, together with the Alaska Intertie, helped provide interior Alaska with cheaper energy available in the south-central portion of the state. The Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project and the Alaska Intertie are the two assets that AEA still currently owns. In 1993, the Board of Directors of AIDA became the Board of Directors at AEA, and this was through legislation in 1993. AEA has continued to exist as a separate legal entity, and the corporate structure of AEA were retained, but AEA lost the ability to have employees and to construct or acquire energy projects. And AIDA personnel provides the management and support for AEA programs. The 1993 legislation required AEA, to the maximum extent feasible, to enter into contracts with public utilities and other entities to carry out AEA duties respecting the ongoing operation and maintenance of the AEA-owned operating assets. This has occurred and continues to occur with the oversight responsibility retained by AEA. For example, the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, we have a utility group that is formed that provide the management of the program or of the project, and Homer Electric Association actually provides, through contractual basis, the services to manage that project. In 1999, the rural energy programs that were previously administered by the former Department of Community and Regional Affairs Division of Energy were transferred to AEA for administration. This was part of a larger reorganization that that took parts and pieces of community and regional affairs and moved them to different agencies. Many of them remained with commerce. There are some programs, I believe, that went over to labor. And the Division of Energy programs then came back in and incorporated into Alaska Energy Authority. These programs were originally part of AEA prior to the reorganization in 93. So in 93, AEA became a very very stripped-down agency with the operation and management of the assets that it owned. The programs, the Division of Energy programs, power cost equalization, the alternative energy programs, and our rural energy technical assistance programs were at this Division of Energy. The next change that has happened in this kind of evolution between AIDA and AEA happened in 2008. And that's when the Board of Directors appointed a separate and independent AEA executive director. And currently I am that person, and I am an employee of AIDA. However, I don't report to the AIDA executive director. Up until this point, prior to 2008, the AIDA and AEA executive directors were one person. Also during this time, in 2008, legislation added some energy development programs to AEA. We established the Renewable Energy Fund and Grant Recommendation Program, and then again in 2010, AEA established the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. As the Office of the Governor Energy Report noted, that was provided to the legislature in January, AEA really has become a key agency for the planning of energy infrastructure and financing. And currently we do this by issuing grants through these various programs, such as the Renewable Energy Fund, and we also manage construction of many rural energy infrastructure projects. And we continue to provide technical assistance and training to local power plant and bulk fuel operators. And AEA, in partnership with RCA, managed the power cost equalization program. So in addition to allowing AEA to own and operate new energy projects, SB 42 provides AEA the ability to hire employees. The appointment of an AEA director that was separate from the AIDA executive director provided AEA leadership distinct from AIDA. It provided the agency focus to manage and pursue energy projects and programs that are important to Alaska. And my predecessor, Steve Hagenson, was instrumental in developing and publishing the energy pathway that was released last year. The appointment of two executive directors has also allowed ADA to develop a strategic plan and focus ADA on economic development opportunities that are also important to Alaska. So, you know, since 2008, we've really seen a very distinct AEA mission and an ADA mission being pursued independently with the leadership of two people rather than one person trying to move two very important missions along, you know, by themselves.
We could just take a brief pause. I would like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Senator McGuire, so we have the complete resource committee here today, so please continue.
Thank you. Providing the ability for AEA to hire employees is the natural next step in providing further differentiation between ADA and AEA. And this is not a complete separation of ADA and AEA. As sister agencies, there will still be shared services and operations by both agencies. And both agencies will continue to be housed in the same building. And I don't want to get into the minutia and the detail of that, but there are some very important systems that both corporations rely upon that if they were separated, it would be very difficult to duplicate that and very expensive too. There's a enterprise system that beyond providing the accounting functions for both agencies is the database for ADA and AEA loan programs and the AEA PCE program. So those are two of the primary pieces of Senate Bill 42, the ability to own and operate new projects and the ability to have AEA be able to hire employees. There is an ability, the SB 42 also provides AEA the ability to create subsidiary corporations for the purposes of acquiring, constructing, owning, maintaining, and operating power projects. This option could be used to limit potential liability of AEA or to strengthen the financial viability of a project. And at this point, it's an option that I believe is very important for us to have as we pursue a large project like Susitna. It depends. There's a great deal of flexibility that we'd have to do that. I'm not certain if it's necessary right now, but I think it is important as we progress that is an option for us to pursue. Senate Bill 42 also allows AEA to adopt its own procurement regulations distinct from the state procurement code. AEA would be required to adopt regulations governing procurement that must reflect competitive bidding principles and provide vendors reasonable and equitable opportunities to participate in the procurement process and must include procurement methods to meet emergency and extraordinary circumstances. This amendment to the procurement code would give AEA similar authority over procurement that is currently exercised by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Kabata, and the Alaska Retirement Board. Chris Rutz, who's AEA's procurement manager, is on teleconference also if there are any specific questions related to this provision. Another provision in Senate Bill 42 creates a new Railbelt Energy Fund. It's called the Alaska Railbelt Energy Fund, which would be a fund of AEA, and it repeals the existing Railbelt Energy Fund. AEA would be authorized to use the money from this fund to conduct feasibility studies, license, permit, acquire, or construct, or to make grants for power projects and transmission lines and interties that serve the Railbelt region. There are a couple other people online in case there are questions. I believe, Mr. Chairman, you've mentioned Brian Bjorkris from the Department of Law, and then also Valerie Walker, who is the Deputy Director of Finance for the Alaska Energy Authority, is available also. Mr. Chairman, we have a sectional analysis that was provided by the committee, and if you'd like, I can go through that sectional analysis. And we also have seven fiscal notes, which we have also prepared a summary document that takes the seven fiscal notes and provides a spreadsheet with the seven columns representing the fiscal note. I thought it was maybe an easier way to review that. So at your pleasure, the sectional first?
That's what you'd prefer.
Okay. I guess if would you like me to pause for questions at this point, or
are there any questions of the committee this time? Proceed forward with the sectional analysis.
Section 1 is the, it amends 3630.015, which is the procurement code, and this is the section that would allow AEA to adopt its own regulations to govern AEA's procurement of supplies, services, and construction. And AEA would be required to adopt regulations that are have the competitive bidding principles. Section 2 of the bill.
Excuse me, Senator Mullikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got an email from some contractors who were very concerned about that provision, the procurement provision. And the, one of the questions that arose was, what about the state procurement codes is not workable for AEA? Why couldn't you just use the current procurement codes?
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, the one thing about AEA's procurement is there's a lot of work that AEA does on behalf of grantees that's currently not subject to the procurement code. And so we have our policies and procedures in place to do that, and we also have some things that we do that are subject to the state procurement code. And so right now we have several different ways that AEA procures goods and services, and this would provide us the opportunity to have one comprehensive procurement code. And with respect to the I think I saw a copy of the email, or I was forwarded that email just before the meeting. I don't know if Chris Rutz, who I forwarded it to him, has had an opportunity to review. But he is online and can provide, I think, a little bit better elaboration with respect to our contract. As our procurement manager, what difficulty he sees in trying to manage several different types of procurement for our agency.
It's an issue certainly for some of the contractors out there, and I guess I would need some sort of compelling evidence, for, at least from my perspective, why we need to abandon the current state procurement code. I know last year we had a bill to change the procurement laws of the state. It was pretty heated. I don't think we were able to reach consensus on it, and so I would like to see the use of the current procurement code, unless you can show some sort of compelling reason why we should abandon that.
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, it's not a circumstance of abandoning the procurement code, because there's a lot of the principles of the procurement code that we would be adopting in our regulations. The one thing that we do have, and I think some of the, my understanding of the conversations from last year, and again, I haven't had a chance to review the contractor's concerns. I believe the procurements, right now we don't have regulations that establish any guidance in how the procurement, we have policies and procedures on those procurements, but right now we don't have established regulations that I think could address the concerns that these contractors have. And I don't know, sometimes with the teleconference, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if they've released it, so Chris is able to.
We'll see. If Chris Rutz, are you online?
Okay, this is Chris Rutz here.
All right, and did you hear Senator Willikowski's inquiry regarding the procurement code issue?
Yeah, yes, I did, and if I can speak to that for a moment, Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to do that.
Certainly, but please, we know you're Chris Rutz, you said that, but please state your title.
Okay, Chris Rutz, and I'm the procurement officer for AEA.
And thank you.
Part of the confusion that happened last year, I think, in the code is as Sarah said, what we are trying to address are situations that aren't currently under the procurement code. And that is when we're often acting as an agent of communities or other entities out there and doing the purchasing, in which case it may be a rural community that has, in some cases, has had grant funds that had been granted to this, and in some cases, the Denali Commission asked us to go in and do the construction on their behalf. Because that community isn't subject to 3630, as we go out and do those procurements, we would follow procedures similar to the code, but not 3630. The issue that comes up is when there is a protest or a dispute. Should the state get drug into that protest or dispute, if it's under 3630, if we're building this project on behalf of the local community? In most cases, when you talk to DOT, they would say, no, that's not our responsibility. You should be handling that, and that should be the responsibility of the community. Based on a ledge audit that was conducted a few years ago, we have modified our procedures so that we are following procedures similar to AS 3630 for those projects. But at this point, we don't have other regulations in place. For instance, that would say if we can have a bidder preference and someone was to challenge, why are you allowing a bidder preference on this project if you're not subject to AS 3630? So to that end, it becomes an issue of authority. And it also, if we were to have one set of regulations that we would follow, it would clarify some of this confusion that we've had in the contracting community about where to file appeals if, in fact, there are protests or claims or disputes in the process.
Yeah, just a comment, Mr. Chair. This is a $5 billion-plus project. This is probably more contracting under this project than the state of Alaska does in several years' time. So I just think we need to tread very carefully on this procurement issue as we move forward, because this could have a huge impact on local Alaskan businesses, local contractors, small businesses. And I'll just leave it at that.
Any additional questions on that topic? So please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 2 of Senate Bill 42 amends 3705 to explicitly allow the legislature to appropriate money from the Railbelt Energy Fund to the newly created Alaska Railbelt Energy Fund. There, through the development of this legislation, there was no easy way to just transfer the Railbelt Energy Fund to become an AEA fund. And so there's a kind of a repeal process of the Railbelt Energy Fund and then a creation of a AEA Alaska Railbelt Energy Fund. Section 3 of the bill amends 3925 to allow AEA to hire an executive director and other staff. Section 4 adds a new section creating this new Alaska Railroad Energy Fund as a separate fund in AEA. Department of Revenue would be the fiduciary, as they are with other funds of AEA. They're the fiduciary for the Renewable Energy Fund, and they're also the fiduciary for the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund. This section also allows AEA to use the money in the fund for power projects, transmission lines, and interties serving the Railbelt region. Section 5 of the bill amends 4483040 that defines that a quorum is 4, not 3 AEA directors. The Board of Directors was the AEDA Board of Directors, which is also the AEA Board of Directors, was expanded from 5 to 7 last year in legislation. What was missed in that legislation is that AEA had a specific statute that defined a quorum. And so this just cleans that up and defines a quorum of 4 of those 7 members. Section 6 of the bill adds a new subsection allowing the authority to appoint persons as staff in the exempt service under 3925. Section 7.
Excuse me, Senator Wilcox.
Yeah. What is it essential that you have exempt employees under this statute?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, AEDA employees are exempt employees. This just mirrors that they would be under the same they would us as AEDA employees, as we become AEA employees, we would have the same exempt standing.
Just follow up. Are there current employees at AEA that are non-exempt or partially exempt?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, no. Wilkowski, excuse me, no.
Thanks.
Section 7 allows AEA to acquire and construct the new power projects and to perform feasibility studies, engineering, and design with respect to these power projects. Section 8.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 4, where the body of Section 7 is found, there's a couple changes. I just have questions about up on lines 5, 6, and 7. It talks about issuing bonds to carry out the corporate purposes. It talks about the acquisition or construction of a project be owned or leased as lessor or lessee by the authority. And then it says, or by another person. Can you tell me what you mean by another person in that line?
Through the chair, Senator French, I, with respect to that, I'm going to have to ask Brian Bjorkus from the Department of Law to help me out there. I believe that was a, I think that was more of a technical amendment. That person, you know, the definition of a person isn't a individual. So
it could be a corporation or a subsidiary.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm guessing, but
I believe that that was the, I believe that was the change.
If we could, Brian Bjorkquist, are you on the line?
Mr. Chairman, this is Brian Bjorkquist. Am I coming through?
Yes, we can hear you, Brian. Please state your affiliation.
For the record, I am Brian Bjorkquist. I'm a senior assistant attorney general for the state of Alaska. The language, or by another person, was taken from the statutory language pre-1993 when the legislation was, these powers were taken away from the Alaska Energy Authority. What this section would provide with, or by another person, is that the AEA in issuing bonds could be financing a project that could be owned by another entity is what I would understand it to be. But the reason that that language is in this bill right now is because it was taken from the legislation, the statutory language as it existed before 1993.
Is that, Senator French, is that?
I think what I hear everybody saying is that it used to read this way, and now it's going to read this way again. Is that what I hear everybody saying?
Please, so.
Okay.
Mr. Through the chair, yes, that was my testimony.
Mr. Bjorkquist, is it substantive in nature in the sense of is it necessary to allow a subsidiary entity or some other entity to fill that role that we don't currently know? Is that the purpose of the or other or by another person language?
Mr. Chairman, that is not why the language is there. And whether the language, additional language would be needed for a subsidiary, I have to take a harder look at the bill. There are some other provisions where we make very clear where the authority, the definition of authority, also picks up the subsidiary. I do not believe that this section is included in that, but that's not the reason why the or by another person was included in the legislation.
Anything further that we need, Senator McGuire?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions for Ms. Fisher Goad. On that section that Senator French was talking about in subsection 6, was there any consideration of legislative approval in that section on the bonds or discussion about it?
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, there was not, with respect to that. I think the when we did develop the legislation, the issues really were providing the level of authority that AEA did have prior to 1993.
Okay, and through the chair, going back to page 3, subsection 4 continues on into sub C. So we're talking now about the rail belt fund monies, which would have been in part transferred from the legislature. That's the concept, and could have then been added to by gifts, bequests, contributions from other sources, federal money, interest earned on the fund balance, et cetera. Under C, it says the authority may use the money from the fund to conduct feasibility studies on license permit acquired to construct or to make grants for power projects and electrical transmission lines or intertie-ins that serve the Rail Belt region. Once again, I just want to hear on the record whether or not there was any consideration at all about whether or not legislative approval should be considered at that point with respect to those Rail Belt energy monies.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, we did go back and forth with respect to what that legislation, should there be legislative approval with respect to specific projects. And that's certainly something that is worth discussing on that. The Southeast Energy Fund that was repealed and reenacted in Senate Bill 220 last year, I believe does not require additional legislative authority, and that was kind of our mindset on looking at, well, what should there be a legislative authority for these funds and not for those? And so there was some consistency that we were looking at between the two funds.
And if I might, through the chair, comment and one final question, and I don't disagree, and I think it's, but I'm highlighting those two areas at this point, and I'm sure there'll be others, just for the committee to really think about the fact that this would be a major departure from where we have been in the practice of the legislature's constitutional right to appropriate funds, and really the responsibility that the voters of Alaska have entrusted us with through this Republican representative form of democracy, where they get the right to throw us out every 2 years over in the other body and every 4 years over in this body if they disagree with the way in which we appropriate those dollars. And the way in which this particular board and its dollars are set up is very expedient, and if I were the head of the state, I would like it a lot because I would get to build a lot of things quickly. That said, if it were a project I liked as a voter, I would be thumbs up, but if it were something I didn't like, I would be grumpy, and I wouldn't necessarily know who to vote out. And so I just want us to be very careful as we think about this here on this committee about those rights that we're giving up in terms of our powers to appropriate, and that's the reason I draw the attention to those two clauses. My final question: in your opening remarks, you made the comment that AEA has been in the practice of managing construction projects, and I just wanted to hear from you briefly what projects those have been that you've managed, under what authority, and what the results have been. If you could share both success stories and failures, managing a project of the size of which the Susitna Hydro would be is a massive project. We haven't seen a hydro project built of that size in 50 years in the United States of America. And I just want to hear what experience AEA has in the area of managing construction projects.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator McGuire, let me start with what projects that we do are currently constructing and managing. The Denali Commission has granted two communities through AEA a considerable amount of money for the last 10 years. What we've constructed and managed through that process are rural energy infrastructure projects. So those are projects that we construct on behalf of communities, whether they're bulk fuel projects and RPSU projects. And so when I mentioned that in my opening comments, those were a lot of the projects that we do. And since we haven't had the authority to own projects or to own new projects, the experience that AEA has, you have to go back to the largest project that was built is the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, which AEA did manage and owns to this day. It is a large leap from the size of Bradley to the project that we're talking about now. That's not the size of the project with respect to AEA's experience on that is it's not lost on me with respect to how large this project is compared to the projects that we've done in the past and how long ago it has been. With respect to that, I guess I've been trying to think of some of the larger projects just in general that the state has taken on that would compare to that, and I'm not certain at this point, you know, if there is one to compare. What I can tell you, what AEA has done through the management and the leadership of AEA is with the $10 million that we received last year to study both the Chacachamna and the Susitna project, we have hired through the competitive bidding process MWH, which is a engineering firm that is under contract with us to work on this project. We haven't had them under contract for very long, but our project manager has met with them, and they've been working through the schedule with respect to the process that we would follow once we file for preliminary permit with FERC with respect to working through the issues. So in-house, AEA hasn't done something this large before. However, through our contracting and our processes, we can hire the entities to work through that and follow the Bradley model, or at least loosely based upon the Bradley model, with respect to partnering with the utilities for a state ownership and utility sharing on a percentage of the project for debt. That's been kind of the model that people have talked about, that there is a successful model in AEA's past, and that it's an appropriate model to use moving forward. Extremely larger, yes.
Thank you very much. Any further questions in that area?
Just Mr. French? A very small one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to page 4, lines 21 and 22. It's adding a couple of powers to the types of contracts you can enter into. It says acquisition and construction. I noticed, though, as I was reading this carefully, that already on line 21 you have the power to contract for the construction, and it says financing, acquisition, and construction again. I know we're all pro-construction, but is that one too many, or are we just construction happy? do you want to throw a couple more in?
Through the chair, Senator French, if it will help, certainly. I will get back to you on that. I think it may be just a duplication.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Point well taken. I believe we were discussing Section 7 in the sectional analysis, and I don't know whether you had gotten through that yet or not, but
I believe so, Mr. Chairman. Section 8 is the section that allows AEA to create a subsidiary corporations for the purposes of acquiring, constructing, owning, maintaining, operating, or financing the power projects. And I know I touched on that in my introductory comments.
We could interject, Senator French.
Just another question sort of on the, I guess, on the general philosophy. Why does it help you to distance yourself from the financial obligations of a project? More specifically, does the Alaska Railroad have this authority to create subsidiaries? Does Kabata have the authority to create subsidiaries? Is this something we routinely grant the public corporations that we create? I'm just curious.
Through the chair, Senator French, actually what we had looked at to see whether this would make some sense is AHFC's legislation last year for the gas development. There is a creation of a subsidiary corporation. We thought it important to have that option in place. I don't think at this point it's necessary for these initial steps that we need to do with the project to create a subsidiary corporation, but I believe in the future that it's a good option for us to have in order to perhaps enhance the financing of a project. And I think since this bill is moving us towards being able to own and operate a new project, and when we get to the point of financing it, which I'm sure there will be plenty of discussions with respect to the legislature when that happens, we thought it was a good time to get that option in place for AEA. And right now, it's an issue that I know we definitely do want that option. I don't see that this is a necessary exercise or necessary power for us to exercise to create a subsidiary immediately when the legislation passes. So,
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under page 6, lines 3 through 5, how is it possible to spin off the assets of the debts, liabilities of the – how is it possible to transfer spin-off state assets and say that your debts are not the obligations of the authority?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I think that's the subsidiary corporations are oftentimes created to insulate your parent corporation from those. And again, I may have to turn to Brian Bjorkvist to help elaborate with respect to the structure of the subsidiary corporation.
Brian, Mr. Bjorkvist.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, again, for the record, I am Brian Bjorkvist, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Alaska. Ms. Fisher-Goh's testimony is correct. A subsidiary corporation is typically formed in large part to shield the parent corporation from the debts and liabilities of the subsidiary, and this sentence just expresses that basic intent.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'll throw it out to Ms. Fisher-Goh or to the committee, but I wonder whether we shouldn't just go ahead and be explicit about it. If we're going to create the Susitna Hydro Now Corporation, we should do that, if that's the idea. And instead of sort of granting unlimited power for you to create 9 subsidiaries or 10 or 100, however many you decide to create, maybe we should just create the one we're actually talking about and have in mind, and we can be a little more explicit about it.
Through the chair, Senator French, I think we can explore that and see if that makes some sense at this point. Certainly.
Thank you. I mean, it's a concern I have about granting unlimited ability versus a specific ability.
Mm-hmm. And it may be a timing function as to when that would be created, so possibly in the thought process that could be more fully developed. Thank you. If you could continue.
Section 9 allows the created subsidiaries to exercise the powers granted to it by the Alaska Energy Authority. Section 10.
Excuse me, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. As I read Section 9, this, among other things, allow this amendment includes subsidiaries and the exemption from regulation by the Alaska Regulatory Commission. Am I reading that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that is correct, and I think that was, again, I think it's the same power that is exercised, or it's providing the subsidiary the same powers that are granted to AEA.
I guess that's sort of
question.
Begs the question, is that in the best interest of the public and the ratepayers to exclude this project from regulatory commission oversight?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I think the exclusion of AEA from regulatory oversight doesn't exclude the utilities that would purchase the power, similar to the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project. The utilities that purchase power from the project are subject to rate regulation through the RCA. So it's not that the entire project or that the entire contracts are there that wouldn't be subject to the RCA. And with respect to that, I think that's my understanding. That is how the Bradley Lake project is managed, and AEA is exempt from RCA through this statute. And so it would mirror that exemption for the new project, for the Susitna project.
So that's a system that is currently operating now?
And Mr. Chairman, I believe that is the case. And again, Brian Bjorkquist can, I think, confirm that with that that is the similar situation that is set up with Bradley.
Mr. Bjorkquist, is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Brian Bjorkquist, Assistant Attorney General. Yes, that is accurate. And it was also accurate that that section, while it exempts the Alaska Energy Authority from rate regulation, it does not exempt the utilities who purchase power from rate regulation or any regulation by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
Mr. Bjorkquist, please stay on the line. Senator Wilikowski has a question.
And we've had this battle for as long as I've been here. I've always had grave concerns about exempting things like this from RCA regulation, particularly in a case like this where you have a $5 billion plus project. The RCA has no oversight to look into whether or not there's waste in that project, to look into whether or not the things that are being done in that project should be charged to the ratepayers. Once you get to the utility level, you lose that level of oversight. You basically lose the level of oversight over the construction of the $5.5 billion project here. So I don't know that protects the ratepayers. I think it's something we probably need to discuss a little bit more in depth, at least for me to feel more comfortable with it. Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
If you could continue. Mr. Bjorkquist, you have a response to that? That you'd like?
Yes, thank you. For the record, I'm Brian Bjorkquist, Assistant Attorney General, through the chair. I would point to one provision in AEA statutes, 4483.396, subsection E, which requires that some of the obligations that you point out that RCA does for other projects, the Alaska Energy Authority has an independent obligation to review projects for efficiency and that type of thing in it while it's managing a project. And so part of the reason why there's an exemption for AEA-owned projects in this process is so you don't have duplicative state oversight over some of those functions.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Well, we sometimes don't necessarily see the greatest efficiency in our government agencies. I note that the fiscal note, for instance, shows that the project office will cost $238,000 for 10 people, which is a cost of $23,800 per person. We have $385,000 being allocated for equipment and furniture for a staff of what I can calculate as 14 people, or $27,500 per person. So I know we all want government to be more efficient. I sort of like to trust but verify by having the Regulatory Commission have the ability to have some oversight there.
Yeah. Senator Wagner.
Just a question for the AG. What oversight does FERC have on this project?
Through the chair, this project would be FERC licensed, and therefore FERC would have certain oversight over the project, just like it has oversight over any other FERC licensed project.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski?
That's a great point. And does FERC have oversight over the rates that are set, or the rates being charged, wholesale rates being charged by SUSTINA?
Through the chair, FERC has, my understanding is that FERC has some ability to affect what the rates are, but it doesn't regulate per se the rates that are charged by a hydroelectric project. And what I mean by that is FERC has certain obligations or oversight duties with respect to construction costs, for example. But when you get into what is the rate that would be charged by a hydroelectric project, that's just one component of what is built into what the total rate would be. It is not my understanding that FERC has oversight over every component of what is built into the rates charged.
Senator Wagner?
I'm getting confused. the power company sells power. They don't. It's not a power sales agreement that's rated, is it? I think we're confusing the two. I mean, AEA through Susitna won't have rates. They will be selling power. It's the utilities that have the rates and are reviewed by the commission. Is that right?
Through the chair, that is correct. And the RCA would have regulation over the rates that the utilities charge to their customers.
I think that what Senator Wilikowski is trying to focus upon is that is there an analysis by some entity, whether it's FERC, that would look into whether the charges, the wholesale charges to the utilities, are satisfactory in light of the ultimate rate to the consumer. Is that a fair representation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
is that a given that as the context of the question, can you more fully develop whether there is consumer advocacy oversight as far as the wholesale rate that might be charged to the utilities?
Mr. Chairman, I am not prepared, for the record, again, this is Brian Bjorkquist, Assistant Attorney General. I'm not prepared now to give a more detailed response. And again, there are certain components that FERC does have some influence and oversight in looking into. But beyond that, I need to do some further work to look at what the scope of that is. But that's the best I can do at the moment.
And again, my sense is that, not putting words in Senator Wilikowski's mouth, is that if there were to be massive overruns, is there an ability to control that through oversight as compared to just passing it on to the consumer? And so I think that's something that the committee appears to be very interested in at the moment. And Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'd be very interested in understanding a little better, maybe from the administration, what FERC actually regulates and what the RCA would actually regulate if we granted them regulatory ability, and maybe a side-by-side breakdown of what we're actually getting ourselves into.
Very valid point raised, so I think that's something that needs to be developed and presented to the committee at a later time. So. All right, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we are on Section 11, which adds a new subsection to include subsidiary-owned projects in the operation of a power project. Section 12 of the legislation amends 4488-83990. Three, by defining feasibility study to include the new power projects. Section 13 is the repeal of the Rail Belt Energy Fund. There are some revisers and instructions, and then there's a transition section of certain state employees from ADA to be transferred to AEA. And Section 16 is a conditional effective date for the repeal of the Rail Belt Energy Fund, referring back to Section 13, which would occur when the balance of the fund is appropriated and transferred to the new Alaska Rail Belt Energy Fund or appropriated and expended for other purposes. And there is an immediate effective date for all sections except what is provided in Section 16.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why would we want to abolish the Rail Belt Energy Fund? I know that's been controversial over the years. We just set up a new Southeast Energy Fund. We have other infrastructure needs in South Central. What's the rationale for abolishing it?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's actually not our intent to abolish the Rail Belt Energy Fund. And if there was a really easy way to us have transferred the Rail Belt Energy Fund to AEA statutes, we would have done that. this was the way to accomplish that by repealing one and creating a new one in AEA statutes. That's why it's now, the new one would be called the Alaska Rebel Energy Fund, to make a distinction between one and the other.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you, Senator French.
And my recollection is that it's $67 million that's at stake. That's how much is left in the Rail Belt Energy Fund. That's what's going to seed this new idea.
Through the chair, Senator French, I believe it's 65.7, and it's the balance of the unexpended and unobligated amount. There are other appropriations. The fund has more cash than that, but that's what is currently not obligated.
Senator Wilkowski.
So right now, expenditures under the Rebel Energy Fund have to be appropriated by the legislature. Making this change, we would lose that power and give that power to the AEA.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the recreation of the Railroad Energy Fund into AEA as the Alaska Railroad Energy Fund, what we did is mirror what happened with the newly created Southeast Alaska Energy Fund, of which if money going into that, there would not need to be, I believe, the further appropriation. However, there are other funds in AEA that have other levels of oversight. So this is certainly something that is definitely, it's why there is this process, of course, is to discuss these issues. The Renewable Energy Fund is probably the example of the fund that we have the least control over and program, because we go through a recommendation process, then the legislature appropriates money to the fund, and then we manage the projects rather than money into the fund and us managing the projects. So there's a variety of ways that can be accomplished and at different levels of oversight.
Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that takes us through the sectional analysis, and we can spend some time on the fiscal note summary.
Please do that, and I know you have, I think, Valerie Walker and Amy. She is the Director of Finance, and then Amy Adler are those as a controller. Who would you, or yourself, who would you prefer to present that, or, you know, how would you like to move forward?
Mr. Chairman, I will attempt to do it on my own. Amy and I have gone through the fiscal note. If I need some help, she may have to come to the table and help me out. So the seven fiscal notes, this spreadsheet that lists all the notes in the analysis, most of the fiscal notes are really dealing with the transfer of staff from AETA to AEA. And so the first column shows the positions that would transfer out of AETA to go to AEA and the costs associated with that would also, the AETA budget would be reduced by that amount. Now there's a couple things going on in there. There is this concept of shared services between the agency, and right now, since it's all AETA staff, there's interagency receipts that come into AETA to pay for that staff. So AEA pays for the work that AETA is doing through a reimbursable service agreement. The way that we've devised the shared services, there's a bit of shared services now going both ways, where there's some AEA staff that primarily do AEA work that would provide services to AETA. So there is an adjustment in the contractual line that shows that AETA would have some certain expenses that they would then RSA to AEA. The second column shows on the AETA facilities. Now, AETA owns the building that we all are in, and right now AETA pays for all of the maintenance and operation and the utilities in the building. AETA is not intending nor will they charge AEA rent if AEA was if we were to fully separate and find our own facilities, AEA, of course, would have to pay rent someplace. It is not charging rent. However, their facilities costs would be a shared cost based upon the number of employees that are AEA versus ADA. So this shows an adjustment that AEA would pick up approximately $142,000 or $143,000 of the facilities expense that ADA currently bears. The goal of the fiscal notes on the AEA side was to keep AEA's operating budget status quo without having them have a reduction. And part of that is, you know, with respect to ADA's programs, they are growing. There are things that ADA is doing, and the request was to have their budget remain status quo. And so the money that they would save from facilities, they would be able to then use in operations. We do ask for one new ADA position in finance that is needed to accommodate some increased workload. We think that this is a cost-effective way to continue to have shared services, but there are some increased costs and there's increased work. Finance bears the brunt of the additional costs that would be created by this. And so with increased workloads, and that's increased workloads from this reorganization and also increased workloads with the additional work that both agencies are doing. On the AEA side, we have two fiscal notes for the same component. One fiscal note is the transfer in of the ADA positions and also the addition of one position for a loan officer. This is one area of ADA and AEA that with the work that ADA's loan officers have currently on their plates and with one area that we'd like to see less shared services, AEA would like to have one person be the AEA loan officer. And so there is a cost to that reflected in this first fiscal note. All of AEA staff, although there's five components in AEA, all of the staff would be located into this statewide project development component, just for ease of, you know, budgeting and finance. The second fiscal note is what would be needed for a project office for the to pursue a large project, and we have used some standard numbers with respect to, you know, leasing costs for the positions that would be available. We expect that there would be contractors that would need some space in the building, not just the eight employees that would be here. I know Senator Wilkowski has expressed a concern with the cost of this. Be happy to sit down and discuss in detail where he thinks that there are some additional unnecessary costs. I can tell you that even as Deputy Director of Operations for both organizations and now as the Executive Director of AEA, we're a frugal organization. We do not take that responsibility lightly, and that's one of the reasons that when we've talked about should there just be a complete split, if you're talking about building a large project, what's an extra few hundred thousand dollars? And that's something that I've heard in various conversations, and I guess in a lot of respects, I $300,000 means a lot for a variety of programs that we have. And so I want to assure the committee that we've taken a very fiscally responsible and conservative viewpoint with respect to what developing a project office for a project of this size would cost. But again, I'd be happy to go over any of those details with any committee member that you'd like.
And as you proceed through in the spreadsheet, if you could identify the specific number that you're referencing while you're explaining that, just so that we can follow you specifically, if I think it'd be helpful.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Are you the number, the column number, or are you?
No, as I understand, you went on the right side of that dark line.
Oh, yes. And sorry.
And then, so which number in that column is it? You know, so that when you say the I think when you're referring to the second fiscal note, I believe you're talking about the 142,000.8.
The dark line represents the differentiation where the ADA fiscal notes are on the left-hand side, the AEA fiscal notes are on the right-hand side. And so I did jump to the second column, which is our what's listed at the top of that is fiscal note 2 of 2. That's the column for the fiscal note that represents the project office. And so that's what we believe is our estimated cost to develop a project office for the purposes of developing a very large hydro project. The other columns are the rural energy operations, AEA PCE, and AEA-owned facilities that have costs. They have staff costs now, which are just RSA'd over to ADA, and all we're doing with these fiscal notes is moving those costs to match up with where the people are, which is the fiscal note 1 of 2, which is under AEA statewide project development. And if that's sorry to dig down into the details, but that's what those fiscal notes are doing. I think it's the first bill that I've been involved in that has had 7 fiscal notes that we've actually generated ourselves, and not just a bunch of fiscal notes from different agencies. The additional costs that are associated with this, I'll just point out real quickly. The net increase of general fund requests for the Alaska Energy Authority is some shared services that currently are not being paid for by AEA. They would still be shared services, but AEA would pick up the portion of those shared services in relation to the number of employees that AEA has versus ADA. And then there's also overhead facility operating costs and G&A not previously paid for by AEA. And so this takes care of some general overhead costs that ADA picks up currently as being the employer of all of the staff, and then also the facility costs. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if there are any other questions with respect to the fiscal note or any other issues, be happy to address them.
Questions from the committee regarding the fiscal notes, Senator French?
I was just going to say, usually it's my bills that get 7 fiscal notes. I'm very pleased to see that happens to everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and yes, we did it to ourselves, too. So.
Anything further that is there any question that anyone might have of Valerie Walker, the AEA Finance, or Amy Adler, Controller? Seeing none. We thank you, we look forward to some receiving additional information and the continuation of this hearing. And so anyway, with that, we adjourn Senate Resources for this Wednesday meeting.